What's it like to serve on a jury, and what does a lawyer look for in selecting a member of a jury? Joining us to take us through the process of a jury trial and the Canadian rules around juries and conducting trials is Victoria criminal lawyer Paul Pearson. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Now, when does a court case go to jury trial? Who makes that decision?
Yeah, in Canada, and we have a different system than in Europe and also a different system from the States. In Canada, if a crime is indictable or an allegation of a crime is an indictable offense, a more serious offense, then in almost all of those cases, you have the option to choose a jury trial. So an accused person, I'll have a client in my office and we'll talk about their drug dealing case or their a murder or a serious assault or something else, bank robbery, big stuff. You have the opportunity to have a jury trial if you would like. And so we call that process the election. And that's an accused person deciding, do I want a judge deciding my case or do I want a jury deciding my case? And there's a lot of
I was going to ask you, how do you make that decision?
So there's a lot of factors. It's, of course, I always say this to clients, and I'll say this to anybody who asks me about the law. It's much more of a human process than a scientific one in that, we're looking at psychology. We're looking at people's emotions. And we know that when people sit on a jury in Victoria, from our experience, they're going to treat it very seriously. They're going to do their best to follow the rules and to apply their oath that they've taken and come up with a good decision. But they're human beings like you and I, and so they're going to have certain strengths and certain perceived weaknesses as far as viewing evidence. A couple of examples. If you have a case where there's a very sympathetic circumstance that's very upsetting from a human emotional level, let's say your client's alleged to have committed a crime against a child, and the issue is there enough evidence to show that that person was there at the time, or what we call an identity case? Judges are generally, traditionally, good at looking at that sort of evidence and weighing it very, very carefully, because in Canada we've had a large number of wrongful convictions based on eyewitness ID or other identity challenges. The concern that you might have if you were advising a client about a case like that was that a jury might not view the evidence as evenly or dispassionately if the allegation is so upsetting that people lose their sort of ability to be rational about it. So we would be concerned if it's really high octane stuff, if I can put it that way. Areas where we think juries are really strong would be if the law might technically say this person has committed this offense, but it's not going to sit well with the jury. An example would be someone gets information that their daughter's been sexually assaulted, and they march over to the other person's house, and they beat the daylights out of that person after a fight. Depending on the circumstances, a judge may say, look, that's not an excuse. We can't have vigilante justice. We can't have people going out and beating people up for assaulting their daughters. You call the police. But members of a jury may have a different view of that and may say, well, this guy had it coming and that's the circumstance. Now, they're not lawless. The jury's going to apply the law and the judge is going to instruct them on it. But you get the idea that there are certain things that are going to go over well with a jury and there are certain things that are going to go over well with a judge. Certain offenses, though, are so serious that the law has said it will be a jury trial. And most notably that in Canada and most commonly, that's murder. So murder is, they have removed the ability of the accused to choose, and it will be a jury trial. So that's why a lot of the murder cases that you'll hear about in the media are jury trials. That person might not necessarily have chosen a jury if they'd had a choice, but it's chosen for them. You can have a trial with a judge alone in a murder case if the prosecution agrees and consents effectively. But in the vast majority of cases, murder trials are in front of juries.
Why would a prosecutor agree to a judge only?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Our prosecutors in British Columbia and in Canada in general are tasked by law not to secure a conviction at all costs. That's not their role. Their role is a minister of justice. They have a different role. As a defense counsel, your primary and most important duty is to defend your client within the confines of the law, to do your best to have them acquitted ultimately in the end of the day. The Crown has a more complicated job, and they need to obviously advocate strongly for the government's case and to try to secure a conviction if they can. But they also have another duty to do justice and do the right thing. And if they agree and see, look, this jury, this is going to be an unfair looking trial, or there's reasons why a jury just this wouldn't make sense, they'll agree to that. They'll be reasonable and say, yep, I agree with that. Other more simple reasons are jury trials take a lot longer. Mm-hmm. They're more complicated because there's just added dynamics that are there, so they're more expensive to run. So the Crown might be concerned about that. And sometimes things will happen in the middle of a trial, and these things are sometimes interesting. Right at the start of a trial, and it looks like it's going to be a jury, but something goes wrong with the jury, for instance, and that just does happen sometimes. But everyone's lined up, the witnesses are lined up, everyone's ready to roll, and for whatever reason, some of the jury can't do their job or there's a problem with the jury. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the Crown will say, okay, let's just proceed with the accused consenting as well. Let's just proceed in front of the judge. So circumstances can change.
I sat on a jury once several decades ago, and it's a very, it's an awesome responsibility when you're dealing with someone's life and you have the ability to send that person to jail. And once you go into that room, decide that person's fate, people take it extremely seriously. It's not a frivolous thing you deal with. And you go through the testimony, and people discuss it, and they have different viewpoints. But you come to a conclusion at the end. And it's not done lightly, I'll tell you. What, as a lawyer, when you choose a juror, what do you look for?
Yeah, and so we have in Canada a process of what we call jury selection. And if listeners have been to one of these, they may well not have been picked for a jury, but it's a large call of people. Sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's hundreds that all mm-hmm. go up to the courthouse, and you literally draw their names out of the hat
yeah.
to be prospective jurors. So they'll line up in front of the effectively the judge's bench with the lawyers sitting there. And what we have, what the lawyers have, is a list of the people's names, their addresses, and their jobs. What are they? What's their occupation? That's all we know. In the States, they'll go through very complicated jury selection processes where they'll question them a lot about the case. What do they know about the case? Those sorts of things. And they're very long, detailed processes. In Canada, we almost never have that kind of challenge to the juror's partiality. We assume mm-hmm. they're going to do a neutral job. But we do have the ability to pick our jurors from the perspective of, in most of our cases, we have the ability to stand aside jurors. If for whatever reason I'm looking at the people who are lined up at the bench and I look at, you know, I can tell something about them from their appearance, which is always mm-hmm. dangerous, but we do it all the time, where they live, what their job is. And I might have certain views about what kind of juror I'm looking for a case who's going to do it, going to sort of... And in my case, I really want them to look carefully at the evidence and listen very carefully to the instructions from the judge. It's a really important part of it. So we can, if we don't like the look of a juror or whatever it is, we can challenge them. So we say challenge. We literally stand up and say, challenge, my lord. And we call mm-hmm. the judge my lord or my lady in Supreme Court. And they would then be stood aside. And then if no one challenges them, the Crown can also challenge or the defense can challenge. If neither one of them challenges, that person would be selected for the jury. And in Canada, we pick them usually fairly quickly. I mean, people that are called mm-hmm. up, you know, we don't challenge a lot of them. Sometimes people will show up for a jury selection and say, look, I run my own business. I have a food cart. If I'm away for 3 weeks, I'm going to be financially destitute. I can't mm-hmm. do this. Or I've got a honeymoon planned and I've got my airline tickets already booked. And the judge can say, okay, then, you know, we won't worry about you. We won't have a big problem. Sometimes we'll have trials, though, and it's really not a big challenge to get people to serve on a jury for a week or two. I think most people would be interested in the process. And mm-hmm. in Victoria, we have a lot of government workers who get paid to be on a jury, so that's a positive thing for them. And so we don't have a lot of trouble with those. The trouble comes when we have a case that's estimated to take 6 months, and you're asking people to give up 6 months of their lives, separated during the day from their families, and to go through this very long, intensive experience. And we've actually had cases in Victoria where we've run out of everybody who was called to the jury selection because everyone, for a variety of reasons, can't serve that 6 months. Mm-hmm. And they've actually had to send out the sheriffs out into the community in a very unique procedure called the talesman, who actually approaches strangers on the street and says, I'm subpoenaing you and bringing you in to be a juror potentially in the case. So they'll actually run around to the community and basically collar people and grab them and come to the courthouse because they're just, the rule is, we need a jury. I mean, it has to happen. So if we got to go out into the community and start grabbing people and say, look, you know, and of course that person would be able to give their opportunity to say why they could or couldn't do it. But I only am aware of that happening once in Victoria, but it does occur.
Paul Pearson is our guest, Victoria criminal lawyer. We welcome your calls. We'll take a break and we'll come right back.
Call us 250-386-1161. BC-wide, call toll-free 1-855-686-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. You're listening to The Ian Jessup Show. If it's the Callwood Crawl or a mess on the Malahat, we've got your back with more traffic more often. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Hey, looks like nobody's home at that house.
Okay, let's see what's inside.
Attention, this is the Alarm Force Central Station. Identify yourself immediately. The authorities have been dispatched.
Let's get out of here.
Protect the ones you love with live two-way voice monitoring from Alarm Force. No telephone line at home, no problem. Go wireless with Alarm Force's cell wave technology. Installed at no charge for a limited time only.
Call 1-800-267-2001. Alarm Force.
So, it's 2015, and I'm shopping for a Ford online. But before I head into my local Ford store, I'm doing all the research on Ford.ca and checking out great vehicles, like the all-new Mustang, 2015 Escape, and Fusion. If I want one in red, it's red. If I want financing starting at 0%, done. It's perfect. Now all I have to do is search the inventory of my nearest dealer, and just like that, found it.
The new 2015 Ford showroom is right at your fingertips. With so much to offer, it's easy to get into a Ford. See Ford.ca for details.
The source is the place for I want that. So when you said I want a great deal on a hot smartphone with an amazing plan, who said we've got a great deal on a hot smartphone with an amazing plan? The source. Right now, get an awesome Samsung GS4 smartphone for $0 on a $45 a month gold plan from Virgin Mobile. You'll get unlimited texting, evening and weekend calling, lots of data and more. Plus, Virgin Mobile members get special offers from Starbucks, Cineplex, Aldo, and other great partners. The source. I want that.
Hi, I'm Ernie from The Foam Shop, where your comfort is our business. Finally, The Foam Shop is in Victoria. Our grand opening is March 28th, and you won't believe our selection and in-store specials of up to 40% off. Plus, we offer the lowest price guarantee, where we will beat any competitor's price by 10%, guaranteed. The Foam Shop, now in Victoria on Spruce Avenue off Douglas, across from the Canadian Tire. Ah, that's better.
This is Julie Skinner from Vision Travel, inviting you to take advantage of Viking River Cruises' Canadian resident offers in Canadian dollars. 2015 departures start at only $19.99 per person, or book your 2016 River Cruise journey at 2015 prices. These amazing offers are only available until March 31st, so call Vision Travel today. Viking River Cruises' number one partner on Vancouver Island. Vision Travel, vacations crafted by professionals. 250-412-1888.
Grandpa, you've done pretty well for yourself. What's your secret?
Jimmy, it's all about planning for your future. And investing in mortgages with a mortgage broker at Great Pacific is a great opportunity for high-yield returns secured by real estate. Then you receive interest on the amount lent out. Great Pacific has been arranging mortgages for over 20 years.
Couldn't I just invest in baseball cards or something?
You're not very smart, are you, Jimmy?
Investing or borrowing? Call Great Pacific Mortgage and Investments. After all, it's your money.
Stimulating talk. Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Paul Pearson, Victoria criminal lawyer. We're talking about jury selection and jury trials. Let's go to the phones and bring in Mehdi. Hi, Mehdi.
Good afternoon. I want to ask Paul about the responsibility of the judge and the lawyers, defense lawyers, in particular in the case of these so-called Islamic terror activities that was happening. One is right now going on in Vancouver, the other one was just finished in Ontario. My question is, I have a document right now in my hand, is called The Sting, How the FBI Created a Terrorist by Trevor Aronson. It was published just last week. And when you read that, it's exactly the same thing, the same scenario that happened in FBI sting in Via Rail trial in Ontario. So my question to you is this, Paul. Does the lawyers have the responsibility to defend these people, because both lawyers didn't put any defense at all, and telling the jury about what's happening in other jurisdiction that is being used the same way we're used here in Canada, and what is the responsibility of the judge in order to warn jurists about this case, and also the fact that one of these guys looks like he's really crazy, and he didn't want to have anything to do with the court, and he wanted the Quran to defend himself. It's a sign of craziness.
Okay, so, Mehdi, I'll have Paul respond to that.
Yeah, and the Via Rail trial back in Toronto raises some of the most difficult challenges for the court and for lawyers. And so, first of all, a lawyer who takes that case on is going to defend it, and they're going to do everything they can to put forward the best defense possible for their client. If they can't do that, they shouldn't take the case. That's just the fundamental rule there. So they're going to do the best job possible. And the reason that that's critical in our system is we have what we call an adversarial system. The prosecutor's on one side, the defense on the other. If the defense only phones it in, so to speak, and doesn't really do a good job, that's an unfair trial. Okay, so we need people to have vigorous defense. That's critical. In that trial, there was, and I'm not sure of the exact details, but Mr. Messaguer, I think, one of the accused, exhibited some challenging behaviors and was not really recognizing the jurisdiction of the court, didn't want to hire a trial or hire a lawyer. In those circumstances, the judge will actually say, I'm going to have somebody act for you, and I'm going to appoint a lawyer, and usually a defense lawyer, to come in and do the work that they should be doing for you. And they'll have this person, we call them an amicus or a friend of the court, who will come in and represent that person's interests. Mm-hmm. And that person will come in and quite vigorously defend the individual. But it's an odd scenario because they're not exactly taking instructions from this person.
Yeah, right? they're not getting cooperation.
And sometimes you'll see these people in the scenario where they're actually trying to counteract what their lawyers are doing. And it becomes very complicated. But our system is very clear. You're going to have representation whether you like it or not. And you're going to get someone in there at least putting some sort of defense forward in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next caller. Jade has a question. Hi, Jade.
Hi. I'm glad you have this topic on. I was just asking a friend about it yesterday. I had been called for jury duty 2 years ago, and it's actually something that I've always wanted to be involved in. But I was in a life-threatening health situation at that time, so my doctor had to write a note. Is there a way that you can volunteer to be on the jury?
Interesting question.
Interesting question, Jade. No, and the answer is no. You're selected from randomly from the voters list. That's how they will get select jurors. So you can't go in and say, I would like to be on a jury. They have to ask you effectively. And then once you're asked for the large, what we call the panel, that's the big group of people, then from there they draw names out of a hat to see who is actually going to be proposed to be the juror. So the shorter answer is no, you can't. You would still be on the list. And many people I know have been on multiple juries because they just happen to be selected. So the big tips if anybody is interested in jury service would be ensure that your address is correct on the voter rolls and watch your mail.
So you don't get penalized at all for not being on it.
Correct. Nope, that's right. They would not strike you off. The only people who are stricken from jury roles, but effectively can't become jurors, or anyone who has relationship with the law. So, for instance, I will never be on a jury because I'm a lawyer. They say lawyers would be. They would taint the process. You would have somebody in there who would be telling other people what to do, and it wouldn't work very well.
Yeah.
So lawyers, people who work in law offices, who hold sort of legal positions, police, that sort of thing, wouldn't be jurors.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a health condition that prevented you from serving once, that wouldn't remove you from the list, is my understanding. Now, if you were interested and had direct questions, it's the sheriffs who are the security and administration people at the courthouse who would deal with that. So they're on Blanchard, or I should say 850 Burdett's the actual address. And you could speak to them to make sure that you were, you know, still in the running, if I can put it that way. But my guess is yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jade. Appreciate it. Next caller is Grant. Hi, Grant.
Howdy, Ian, and your guest. Can you talk about the what happens in a mistrial to the jury, like the one we just had here in Victoria?
So we, in some circumstances, then there's a few different things that can cause a mistrial, and we can think
Hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Ryan.
So we, when we have a mistrial, we can think of it as a do-over. Okay, that's what it is. It's sort of a, okay, that's it. We're going to have a do-over. We're going to do this all again. That can happen because evidence has been put before the jury, which shouldn't have been put before the jury. Something that, you know, there was a mistake. They've heard something that they shouldn't hear. That's prejudicial or problematic. If jurors start to become ill and we drop down below, we can still run it. So we start with 12. Mm-hmm. If we can finish a trial with 10, and in long trials where people get sick, they get, you know, tired, they, you know, basically lose the ability to be jurors, we'll sometimes pick alternates. So we'll actually pick 14 people and say, okay, all 14 of you show up on trial on day one, and then we'll release the alternates.
Replacement.
That's
yeah.
Right. So
why is it always an even number?
I don't know. It's interesting. Well, and here's the reality for us. In criminal trials, we don't have it. It's not a decision by majority. It's unanimous. So they must be unanimous in their verdict. And the reference was made to the mistrial locally, but last week we almost had a mistrial in the Via Rail trial because evidently the jurors couldn't come to a decision on one of the charges effectively. Mm-hmm. And people are very, very firm in their opinion sometimes and do not want to have their opinion changed. So even if 11 of them are saying, this is ridiculous, this person's innocent, there's no way they've done this, one person is holding out, or if the reverse is true, and one person's holding out, they hold out as long as that person can bear the pressure, the peer pressure.
Yeah.
And if they've been hanging out for 3, 4, 5 days, the judge will call them in. And then they'll send a note normally saying, we're deadlocked, we can't make a decision, you know, and they'll always blame the person who's on their own saying they're acting crazy because the rest of us don't agree with them. Mm-hmm. And the judge will bring them in and say, go back out there and try it. And they'll, what we call, exhort them, meaning we're going to try to encourage them to actually come up with a decision. And ultimately, if they can't, there's a mistrial. If there's multiple counts and they can come to a decision on some of the counts, some of the charges, then that's fine. They can come back with those decisions. That's what we saw last week in the Via Rail trial. But if it's, you know, is very typical in a murder trial, we'll have just one count. It's murder. And if they're deadlocked on that, that's it. They're going to redo that trial again.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Paul, appreciate you coming in. And Paul is back again on Easter Monday.
That's right.
April 6th.
Yeah.
And we'll chat more about the law and other issues. We may even talk about Bill C-51 because Canadian Bar Association has come out in opposition to it. And we'll have a chat about that. When we come